ಜನಾವಲ್ಲಭ ಗಿರಿವರಧಾರಿ ಯಶೋದಾನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಮುನಾ ತೀರವನಚಾರಿ ಯಮುನಾ ತೀರವನಚಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ವಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ವಿಹಾರಿ
ಜಯ ಓಂ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಕ ಆಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಶತ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ ಹಿಸ್ ಡಿವೈನ್ ಗ್ರೇಸ್ ಎಸಿ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಶಿಲು ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಕಿ ಜಯ ಅನಂತ ಕೋಟಿ ವೈಷ್ಣವ ವೃಂದ ಕಿ ಜಯ ಗ್ರಂಥರಾಜ್ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ ಭಾಗವತಂ ಕಿ ಜಯ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು ಅಂಡ್ ಗೌರಂಗ ನಾರಾಯಣಂ ನಮಸ್ಕೃತ್ಯ ನರಂ ಚೈವ ನರೋತ್ತಮಂ ದೇವಿಂ ಸರಸ್ವತೀಂ ವ್ಯಾಸಂ ತತೋ ಜಯ ಮುದೀರಯೇತ್ ನಷ್ಟಪ್ರಾಯೇಷು ಭದ್ರೇಷು ನಿತ್ಯಂ ಭಾಗವತ ಸೇವಯಾ ಭಗವತಿ ಉತ್ತಮ ಶ್ಲೋಕೆ ಭಕ್ತಿರ್ಭವತಿ ನೈಷ್ಠಿಕಿ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಪ್ರಹ್ಲಾದ ಉವಾಚ ಶ್ರವಣಂ ಕೀರ್ತನಂ ವಿಷ್ಣು ಸ್ಮರಣಂ ಪಾದಸೇವನಂ ಅರ್ಚನಂ ವಂದನಂ ದಾಸ್ಯಂ ಸಖ್ಯಮಾತ್ಮನಿವೇದನಂ ಶ್ರವಣಂ ಕೀರ್ತನಂ ವಿಷ್ಣು ಸ್ಮರಣಂ ಪಾದಸೇವನಂ ಅರ್ಚನಂ ವಂದನಂ ದಾಸ್ಯಂ ಸಖ್ಯಮಾತ್ಮನಿವೇದನಂ. So we'll have one Prabhu and one Mataji recite. Go ahead, please. Shravanam kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam padasevanam Archanam vandanam dasyam Sakhyam atmanivedanam. Go ahead. Well, you already started. I said one Prabhu and one lady, and so you're doing it on behalf of the ladies. No problem. Go ahead. Okay. Right. Shravanam kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam padasevanam Archanam vandanam dasyam ಸಖ್ಯಂ ಆತ್ಮ ನಿವೇದನಂ. ಟಿಲ್ ವೇರ್ ಡಿಡ್ ರಾಧಾರಮಣ್ ಪ್ರಭು ಡು? ಒನ್ ಮೋರ್ ಪ್ಯಾರಾಗ್ರಾಫ್ ಓರ್ ದ ಹೋಲ್ ಪ್ರಪೋರ್ಟ್? ಐ ಡೋಂಟ್ ಥಿಂಕ್ ದ ಹೋಲ್ ಪ್ರಪೋರ್ಟ್. ಒನ್ ಪ್ಯಾರಾಗ್ರಾಫ್. ಓಕೆ, ಸೊ ವಿಲ್ ಜಸ್ಟ್ ಡೂ ಒನ್ ಪ್ಯಾರಾಗ್ರಾಫ್ ಎಟ್ ಅ ಟೈಮ್, ಬಿಕಾಸ್ ದಿಸ್ ಹಸ್ 9 ಪೇಜಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಪ್ರಪೋರ್ಟ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಇಟ್ಸ್ ಇಂಪಾಸಿಬಲ್ ಫಾರ್ ಎನಿ ಒನ್ ಪರ್ಸನ್ ಟು ಇನ್ ಅಬೌಟ್ ಹಾಫ್ ಅವರ್ 40 ಮಿನಿಟ್ಸ್. ಸೊ ದಿಸ್ ಇಸ್ ಫಾರ್ ದೋಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಯು ಹೂ ಆರ್ ಜಸ್ಟ್ ಜಾಯ್ನಿಂಗ್ ಅಸ್. ಫಸ್ಟ್ ಆಫ್ ಆಲ್, ನೈಸ್ ಟು ಸಿ ಯು ಅಲೆಕ್ಸ್, ಸೊ ನೈಸ್. This is the very, very famous set of verses that Prahlad Maharaj is speaking about the 9 processes of devotional service. And the nine are here. Shravanam, hearing. Kirtanam, chanting. Smaranam, remembering. Padasevanam. Archanam, he starts. Archanam means worshipping the deity or worshipping Krishna. Vandanam, offering prayers. Padasevanam, serving the lotus feet of the Lord. Dasyam, being a servant of Krishna or of carrying on as a servant of Krishna. Sakhyam, serving in friendship with Krishna. And Atmanivedanam means offering everything to Krishna. The word Atma is used in different ways. It means the body, it means the mind, it also means the soul. So Atmanivedanam includes giving everything to Krishna in service. And he says that these are the nine processes which are accepted as direct devotional service. And according to Prahlad Maharaj, he says, I consider these to be the best. Or learned persons have considered these to be the best. Tanmanye aditam uttamam. That those who are learned personalities, they have understood and explained that these nine methods of direct devotional service to be the best. So what we have been doing, because it's a 9-page purport, is just going each day one paragraph at a time. Couple of things to remember. If you notice carefully, it is described that the first three, Shravanam, Kirtanam, and Smaranam, are activities of the Bhagavat Marga. And the other six are activities of what's called Pancharatrika. So in the Vedas, or in the Vedic, I guess, methodology, there are two ways of becoming qualified to serve Krishna. One is called Smartha. Smartha means where they rigorously learn to remember on the basis of Brahminical qualification, mostly by birth, that they are born in a Brahmin family, they are cultured from the time they are born into becoming Brahmanas. And there is a school of thought that says that only one who is born in a Brahmin family can be a Brahmin. Now, this is not accepted by all the Acharyas necessarily, but the Smartha school of thought is such. Then there is the other school of thought called the Pancharatrika, which is professed by Srila Narada Muni. And according to Pancharatrika school, anyone and everyone can be trained to becoming a Brahmin. And therefore, if you see, Narada Muni preached to a whole variety and range of peoples and made them very qualified. For example, Mrigari the hunter. You know the story of Mrigari the hunter? Yes? How many know the story of Mrigari the hunter? You don't know the story. Do you know the story of Mrigari the hunter? Okay, we'll narrate that. There's Mrigari the hunter, for example. Then there is Ratnakar, who became Valmiki Muni, who wrote the entire Ramayana, but he was a dacoit before he met Narada Muni. As they say, every saint has a past and every sinner has a future. So there is a qualification by dint of contact with a pure devotee, anyone can become qualified to serve Krishna. Because serving Krishna is not necessarily a qualification, it's one's constitutional nature. Regardless of what family, what country, what caste, what prior qualifications, how terrible a person was before meeting the great sages, a saintly person. One could have been a murderer, one could have been like the worst of the lot. still they have an opportunity to become a very pure person in bhakti. It doesn't mean after bhakti one can do all these things. It doesn't matter. I'm in this frame of mind because while Guru Puja was happening, I had some assignments to do. I'm part of, this is just a sidebar, I'm part of something that's called the GBC College. It's a place where they're training the few of the current leaders to take on the next level of responsibility. I was assisting the GBC for a zone. It's an interesting concept that they want to train leaders. We have never done that in our movement, so it's a very novel concept. And I'm being trained. So I'm attending different classes and online courses. Twice in the year I have to go to India and sit in classrooms from morning till night, starting from Mangalarti through 9 o'clock at night, non-stop, lunch break in between a couple of hours. And then we are taken through a whole range of courses, finance, accounting, leadership, shastra, child protection is just what, and then there between these two, I have online courses. I have to hear, study, and respond to assignments, right? And there's a deadline. Deadline is tonight midnight. And like every good student, I wait till the deadline, right? Just, I've tried as much to do all these assignments way ahead of time. And then you have Rath Yatra, Festival of Holy Name, and everything just takes a back seat. So I have a deadline at midnight and my day is already packed. So I have to find little pockets of time to put in an assignment or two, right? And this assignment I'm working on is for child protection and protecting ISKCON and the devotees from abuse. And it's the context is that Hiranyakashipu is going to abuse his own child physically, emotionally. Of course, he's trying spiritually, but there's no sexual abuse here. But one of the biggest concerns is sexual abuse. Now, abuse is not just sexual, but physical, emotional, etc. And what the first step or the lighter version of abuse is neglect, especially of children. When children are neglected or parents are so absent-minded, I'll give you a couple of examples. This has nothing to do with Shravanam Kirtanam, but I'm in that mode, so I have to change. When parents visit the temple, they have little children, and I don't know if you've noticed, they're so absorbed in praying to Krishna that their child leaves the temple room, runs upstairs, out the temple. They have no clue. This is called neglect, because they are putting their child at risk. So parents are meant to take care of their children. Or, you know, in the house, they don't provide the right environment, right things, they starve the kid, whatever. So these are all neglect and abuse. So anyway, regardless of what background a person comes from, when they meet a devotee of Krishna, that is sufficient to make them qualified to serving Krishna. And Narada Muni, usually you'll see in Bhagavatam, is one of those transforming personalities. One may be a king, one may be a beggar, one may be a man, one may be a woman, one may be from a very cultured family, one may be from a very uncultured background, one may be very educated, one may be not educated at all, one may be a saint, one may be a sinner. Regardless, a pure devotee can take them to Krishna. So that's called the Pancharatrika method. And the six that are described here are part of the Pancharatrika. Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakhyam, Atmanivedanam. So our life, devotional life, should be a healthy mix of these two. So if you notice, the way Prabhupada designed our day, that it starts with Shravanam, Kirtanam and Smaranam. And then the rest of the day is nicely designed for Pada Sevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Sakhyam, all of that. And then evening, again, Shravanam, Kirtanam, and Smaranam. Wonderful. That's one. Second, these things don't happen in compartments. For example, we don't say, my dear Krishna, I'm going to move from Padasevanam to Archanam now. Half an hour later, I will do Shravanam. It's not like that. It's all one integrated unit. Because when we're in front of the deity or doing some service for Kishore Kishori, we are doing Shravanam. We are doing Kirtanam. We are hopefully also Smaranam. And other things that are listed here. So they all work one with the other. They're integrated together. It's not like I'm praying only when I'm standing in front of the deities. Otherwise, I'm not praying at all. Of course, some of us don't pray at all. We forget the very, very important potency in praying to Krishna. Oftentimes, our tendency is that when we are in some difficulty, our tendency is to, in our mind, figure out a solution. How many of us have had that experience? As soon as there's a problem, we try to figure out a solution. And it's described that figuring out a solution, while it's not that we shouldn't, it should be done on the basis of our prayer to Krishna. Oh, my dear Gornithai. Of course, Prabhupada told us to pray to Gornithai. And he said it should be prayed in this way. My dear sirs, because they're standing there, that's the way to address. My dear sirs, I am in such and such situation. And I seek your mercy because what the path forward doesn't seem clear. Please give me your mercy so it may be clear how I may continue serving you. That prayer is very essential. Vandanam, it's often forgotten. Or we make up our own prayers, which is a little, well, there is room for it. Rupa Goswami says we should also offer our heartfelt prayers. But in Nectar of Devotion, he gives the three categories of prayer. He said one should first learn standard prayers, you know, like offer the prayers that Prahlad Maharaj or Queen Kunti or Bhishmadev, etc., that they offer. One should learn them. These are standard prayers. So in Nectar of Devotion, he says, when it comes to Vandanam, that one type is called Samprarthanatmika. Offering prayers in the mood of the previous great devotees. Another is called Dainyavodhika, meaning coming in front of the deity and expressing abject humility. That should be another type of prayer, that I find myself completely incapable of doing even the simplest of things. I find myself that my heart is filled with all sorts of garbage that others don't see, but you can see. Or that I hide that from others in the way I speak and behave, but you can see. But please continue giving me your mercy. Right? We know what's in our heart. Others don't see. We know. And some things we also don't see or don't want to see, but Krishna sees. Definitely. We say, it's okay, it's okay. And Krishna says, I see everything. And the third category of prayer is called lalasamayi, meaning offering a request or a petition for a particular service engagement. That, my dear Krishna, or Gornithai, or Jagannath, Baldev, Subhadra Devi, or Prabhupada, I would like to become qualified to serve you nicely. I would like to, I find that I have a particular gift that you have given me. I would like to offer that in your service nicely. Please qualify me. please help me become nicely trained up by the devotees, so I may serve you not just for the next 6 months or 1 year, but for my entire life starting now. These are called lalasa mayi. Of course, in a more refined manner, then there are specific prayers. One expresses details of how they want to serve. So for your reference, there is a song by Narottam Das Thakur in the category of lalasa mayi. And that song is called Radha Krishna Pran Mora Jugala Kishore. You've heard that song? Okay. In our song book, that song is there by Narottam Das Thakur. And he says how he wants to serve Radha and Krishna. He says, I will make them sit on a golden throne. I will offer them wonderful things to eat and drink. I will fan them very nicely. And I will always hold on to their lotus feet. It's an expression. It's a lalasa mayi. It's a desire. It's a petition. Please allow me to serve you this way. Beautiful song. He goes into details. I'll give them a betel nut and betel leaf to eat after their lunch, etc., etc. A beautiful song. Radha Krishna Pran Mora Jugala Kishore. Jugala Kishore means Kishore Kishori. Whenever you hear the word Yugala, it means a pair. P-A-I-R, pair. And Yugala Kishore means a pair of young personalities. Kishore means teenage, about 15 and a half or 16 years old. So pair of such, Yugala Kishore means Kishore Kishore. So Narottam Das Thakur is praying to Kishore Kishore actually, that this is how you'd like to serve them. Very beautiful song, part of Vandanam. So anyway, how Shravanam, Kirtanam, etc. are integrated with the others. Another point is we cannot do Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, etc. We cannot do them properly without Shravanam, Kirtanam and Smaranam. So if you don't chant properly, if you don't hear properly, if you're not remembering what we have heard in class, we're not discussing with each other what we heard in class, then when it comes to the actual service, practical, as I call it, the field of application, it will not have the same taste. One thing that I make fun of, I try to say it in a, light mood is, when we chant Hare Krishna properly, right, attentively, what is it that we are saying in our attentive chanting? Do you know? It has some meaning, correct? What does Hare Krishna chanting mean? Exactly. Oh, my dear energy of Krishna, Srimati Radharani, please engage me in the service of your beloved Krishna. This is a bit, when we attentively chant, which means we are attentively seeking service. If we don't attentively chant, one, no service comes our way. Woohoo! That's wonderful. No one's going to disturb us with some service. That's the problem. And if some service comes, if we hadn't chanted properly, we see that as an impediment somehow. The chanting, that service became an obstruction to something else. I don't know what obstruction it becomes, but if we don't hear and chant properly, we can't serve properly. Yeah? Make sense? So that's the point. If we don't hear, chant and remember, we have to remember. So hearing includes Kirtanam and Smaranam. We think they're compartments. Hearing doesn't mean we sit in class, eyes are open, but the mind is traveling. Different places or different thoughts. When is this guy going to keep quiet? Why is he saying the same thing again and again? Is he talking to me? Is he pointing at me? Or I'm hungry, today's Ekadashi, what's happening in the kitchen, or planning my day. This is how I'm going to do at 9 o'clock, then 10, and 11 o'clock. Did I get any text messages? What else is going on? This is not hearing. And hearing includes discussing the points with others. I heard this in class. I understood this way. Or did you understand it? And remembering that throughout the day. Part of remembrance is, it's described that when we come in front of the deities for darshan, Prabhupada said, it's like the eyes and mind take a photograph that you, for the rest of the day, remember. Now, if any one of us was asked, don't look at the deities right now, can you tell what color of dress they're wearing? Of course, we know that Ekadashi means white and red. But you ask any details of what's on their crown, what kind of pins or something Jagannath's wearing, or fan, or how are the flowers, we may not remember. Part of remembrance is to deeply absorb, etc., or a shloka or something. Is it meant to remember? We remember verses because that's our contact with Krishna. That's our contact with devotional service. It's nice to learn one or two or a few shlokas regularly, even if Sanskrit is difficult. Even if we can remember the English, that's fine. But the spirit of it is to remember Krishna. So, today's purport, it says, one's sincere endeavor to perform these nine processes of devotional service is technically called bhakti. So it says, sincere endeavor. The word adha means directly. One should not be like the karmis who perform pious activities and then formally offer the results to Krishna. This is karmakanda. One should not aspire for the results of his pious activities, but should dedicate oneself fully and then act piously. In other words, one should act for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu, not for the satisfaction of his own senses. This is the meaning of the word adha. So I covered this on Thursday. We're going to move forward. Then Prabhupada quotes, Anyabhilashita shunya jnana karma dhanavritam anukulena krishnanu shilanam bhakti ruttama. One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably and without desire for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service. One should simply satisfy Krishna without being influenced by fruitive knowledge or fruitive activity. Okay. Now, we've heard this verse many, many, many times. Correct? So we'll hear it one more time. Because this verse is called the Paribhasa Sutra, or the pivotal verse of the entire Nectar of Devotion. The entire book is based on this verse. Do you know which verse is the one on which the entire Bhagavatam is based on? There is one verse in the third chapter of the first canto. Ete cham sakala pumsa krishnastu bhagavan swayam indrari vyakulam lokam ridayanti yuge yuge. It is considered that that's the verse. It's called the paribhasa. The entire Bhagavatam sits on that verse. That Krishna is the source of all the different incarnations. Ete cha amsha kalapumsa krishnastu bhagavan svayam. And Krishna is the fountainhead, or the source of all the Vishnu expansions, all the energies and everything else that is in existence. Krishna is the source of that. And so that's how the Bhagavatam is sitting on that verse. Similarly, this verse is the one for Nectar of Devotion. So the first two lines tell you what not to do. The second two lines tell us how to. This is the definition. This verse is the definition of pure devotional service. Because the last line says, Bhaktir Uttama. The word Uttama means transcendental. Tama means ignorance, and Uttama means beyond the realm of ignorance. Transcendental. So, Uttama Bhakti, or transcendental devotional service, is that which has these characteristics. So there are two positive characteristics and two negative characteristics. Like negative in the sense they should be avoided, and two should be practiced. Clear? So the ones that should be avoided is first, Anya Abhilashita Shunya. Shunya means zero. What should be zero? Anya Abhilasha. Any extraneous materialistic desires. Any material desire should be zero. Anya Abhilasha. Meaning, my spiritual master calls it we should avoid the two-pocket philosophy. Two pockets means something for Krishna, something for me. Something for Krishna, something for me. Only one pocket, everything for me. Right? Correct. Everything for Krishna. Anya Abhilashita Shunya. First of all. Now for this to be zero, there is something that we have to learn and live by. And that's the second line. Jnana Karmadi Anavratam. We should be free of fruit of knowledge and fruit of activity. How many of us have heard the word fruitive in Prabhupada's books manifest? How many times? Millions of times. What does the word fruitive mean to you? Steve. With the desire to enjoy the result. Okay, that's one. Very good. What else? Yes. Fruit of the results of activities. Correct. I'm doing it for some material purpose. Very good. I know. Fruit of. But what does it mean to you? Gaining something. Okay? Yeah. Correct. I'm doing it because there is something at the end of it that I'm really looking for. What else? Fantastic. Sounds like a business mentality. I give something because I want something. Like if you go to a restaurant, they give you service. They smile. They escort you to a seat. Someone brings your lunch or dinner. They smile at you. They're very courteous to you. And if you tell them, thank you, I'm not going to pay for any of these things. What will happen to their smile? Right? Or you go to a workplace. They say, this is your job. You have to work on these projects. Oh, by the way, we won't pay you. Prabhupada said like that. These are young people. I don't pay them. In fact, they bring money to me. Because there is love. So, fruitive means absence of the heart, but mostly some material gain. So fruitive knowledge means that knowledge that I learn, mostly skill or knowledge that I learn, because that helps me get something. What is it that mostly we want at the end of the day? No, money, sleep. People will sacrifice sleep for money. You want money. Unless you're sleepy now? Okay. People want money. It's the wealth, or we shouldn't say wealth, it's money for which they're motivated to doing anything. Right? If you want to motivate someone, you increase their salary and they're very motivated. You decrease someone's salary and they're demotivated. So fruitive knowledge means that knowledge that will help them bring about material facilities at the end of the day. So I get a college degree because I want money. That's fruitive knowledge. And fruitive activity means I'm doing these things because I want something. I want name, I want fame, I want money, I want recognition, whatever it is called at the end of it. Here's the thing about fruitive. Once we come to serving Krishna, our fruitive mentality continues this way sometimes. That we offer a prayer to Krishna, I am in such and such difficulty, can you please help me? And then we look at our clock. How long are you going to take, Krishna? Come on. I made my prayer. No, come on. From your side, do something. Or, I offered you some service and now you take care of me. Haribol, what's going on? You take care of me. What are you doing for me? This is fruitive. I do something for you and you do something for me. Cool, it's a nice arrangement. This is not bhakti. Of course, Krishna does, because love is reciprocal, no doubt. Krishna does, but we're not looking for it, or we're not supposed to be looking for it. We're supposed to offer our service to Krishna and say, please accept my service, and that's it. Do you want anything? No. I want more service. I know you're saying it like this. Meet me after class, I'll tell you. Yeah, I want more service. If anything I want as a reward for my service, I want more service. That's all. Mama janmani janmanishware bhavatad bhakti rahaituki. Please engage me life after time in your service. I don't want remuneration. Because the moment you give me remuneration for that service, I have lost the beauty and charm of it. Because now it is in terms of money. Now it doesn't mean devotee should not be taken care of and all that. I'm not suggesting that. Devotee should be taken care of and all of that. But the point is that we are not looking for that. That's not our mentality. And fruitive means, another fruitive way that we act in our devotional life. Hare Krishna? Okay. Another way we act fruitively in our devotional life is that we hold our beads, we squint our eyes, and we chant Hare Krishna, trying to hold our mind. Tried that ever? All the time, right? Hare Krishna. And we notice that our mind is all over the place. It's fruitive in the sense that I feel that if I do certain things, I can control the mind. If I do certain things, I can control Krishna. I say the right things, I do the right things, and Krishna is controlled by me. No. Krishna is controlling the mind. So our only prayer during japa is, please let me not fall asleep, and somehow you please control my mind if you can. Because I tried, I can't do it anymore. You take care of it. Another fruit of mentality in our bhakti is, I expect that every time Krishna has to respond to me the same way when I do the same things. Krishna is not a machine. My spiritual master says he's not a vending machine. You know how a vending machine works? I put the quarter, I put the coin, I make the selection, I press the button, boom, I get my can of soda. Krishna is not a machine. So one day I pray and I get reciprocation. Somebody will say, very nice Prabhu, nice service, whatever. I have new realizations from the Bhagavatam. Next day I do the same thing, right? We try. I pray and chant. And nothing happens to them. We can't realize anything. We can't hear anything. We try very much. We fall asleep. And we wonder, why are you doing this to me, Krishna? Fruitive mentality means putting Krishna into a box, expecting a certain pattern of behavior from him. And anywhere in the Bhagavatam, has Krishna behaved according to any pattern? Absolutely not. In fact, he breaks all patterns. That's fruitive thinking. If I do these things, Krishna will do those things. It's not like that. One day Krishna will smile. Krishna always is smiling. So one day we get great encouragement. Next day we might get great chastisement for doing the same thing. And we wonder, hey, I just did that yesterday. You patted me on the back and today you're chastising me. Yeah? Krishna can do anything. Krishna is not bound by our molds. He's not bound. He's not obliged. Another fruitive mentality tells us, if I do something, Krishna is obliged and bound to doing that for me, something for me. He's not obliged. We can offer devotional service for the next 50 lifetimes and he doesn't have to say, okay, I like it, or budge, or accept anything. Not obliged. We can, let's say, cook, or sing, or dance, or distribute books, or whatever service we do. We may do very, very nicely, with genuine feelings for Krishna. But Krishna does not have to accept it. So when we offer on the altar, or wherever we make an offering, we chant the mantras, we ring the bell, and we say, please accept it. There is no need for Krishna to accept anything. Why? One, because he's the Supreme Lord. Second, he doesn't have to. He's Swarat. If he likes it. Otherwise, he won't. But when he's petitioned by love, then he's very obliged. He cannot say no, even if he wants to say no. So therefore, we offer through the disciplic succession in a way to assure that he doesn't say no. Because by the time it comes to Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas and it goes to Krishna, to Radharani, she will say, you should accept this offering. He says, no, no, no. No, no, you should accept. Alright, if you say, I will do it. This is the power of Srimati Radharani. She will make him do all the things that he doesn't want to do. She has that potency. He's obliged to her. There's a joke. There's one devotee, a person came and accidentally he dropped his wallet. So he bent down to pick it up. And Srimati Radharani said, there, he's offering obeisances to you. And Krishna said, that's not obeisances, he's picking up his wallet. Srimati Radharani says, no, no, it is obeisances. You should accept it as obeisances. All right, if you say so, I'll accept it. Because he's obliged by love. And love has the power to make Krishna do all sorts of things that he would not do otherwise. All sorts of things. All sorts of things. For love, Krishna can become a watchman, a guard outside of Yudhishthira's palace. For love, Krishna took up the service at the Rajasuya Yajna. You know what service he took up? He took up the service of washing the feet of all the guests who came to Yudhishthira Maharaja's palace. Krishna himself was the chief guest, but he took up the service of washing everyone's feet outside. That's the power of love. He will eat the peel of a banana when Vidura's wife gives it to him accidentally. No problem. He will eat it. Or when Shabari offers Lord Ramachandra fruit that she tastes. You know that story? Oh. Agastya Muni had a disciple. Actually, there's one sage who was a disciple of Agastya Muni, I think, who told Shabari, this young widowed lady, that perform devotional service to Lord Ramachandra and he will come. One day he will come to take from your hand directly whatever you offer. So she used to offer to the deities every day some fruits. And because her spiritual master had told her that he will come one day, she had that conviction. And she waited for many, many, many decades with that conviction that one day he will come. Because my guru said, it will happen. So when Lord Ramachandra was in exile, he was passing through Dandakaranya forest. He came to that place where Shabari was. By this time she had become very old. And when she saw Lord Rama and Lakshmana and Sita Devi, she became jubilant. So quickly she gathered some berries from around. That's all you get in the forest, right? So she gathered a bowl of berries and she had to offer to Lord Ramachandra. Now when we have to make an offering of berries, we'll wash them, put them on a plate with a tulsi leaf, ring the bell, say the prayers, and hope that he accepts it, correct? She offered in a very different way. She took a berry, bit into it, and then gave it to Lord Rama. She took another berry, bit into it, discarded it. Took another berry, bit into it, gave it to Lord Rama. Now, we never eat first to give the Lord first. But her mood was, I don't want even one sour berry to go to Lord Ramachandra. I want the sweetest of ones to go. So she bit and gave. And Lord Ramachandra happily ate all the berries she gave. So the devotee ate first and then the Lord. But that's the power of love. Now we cannot offer like that. We cannot. She did. Because the power of love is such that it obliges Krishna. So these first two lines help, Rupa Goswami is helping us go beyond the patterns of fruitive nature that's ingrained in us. We're patterned. Since our childhood, we have been patterned. You do this, I'll give you this. You do this, I'll give you this. You do this, I'll give you this. You mow the lawn, I'll give you some money. You do this errand for me, run this errand for me, I'll give you some money. This is fruit of mentality. And it's so ingrained that we bring that to devotional life. So Rupa Goswami first off says, Jnana karma dinavritam. Remove all that. Second is Anya abhilashita. Do not come to Krishna with any material desire. And by the way, even if we come with a material desire, that's all right. Krishna is not obliged to fulfill it. Secondly, it's described that Krishna, he fulfills your material desire in such a way that you will not have any material desires. He's very tricky. Very, very tricky. He will make sure that he will fulfill your desire and make sure that the desire only doesn't exist anymore. You know why? Or you know how he does that? It's described by giving his lotus feet. Because once a person gets his lotus feet to serve, everything else seems pale and tasteless. See, in the case of Dhruva Maharaj, I want the kingdom that is greater than my great-grandfather's. His great-grandfather's kingdom is the entire universe, Lord Brahma. So I want something greater than that. And did Lord Vishnu give it to him? Of course. He became the king of the pole star, Dhruva planet. That is where Lord Vishnu also resides. But when Dhruva Maharaj saw Lord Vishnu, Prabhupada describes, he says, Swamin kritarthosmi varam na yachet. My dear Lord, I am so satisfied simply to see you, I do not want any benedictions from you. And Lord Vishnu says, no, become the king. Please, no, you should be the king. But in such a way, he fulfills the desires. Try not to get distracted by phones and other things while we're here. So then, that's the first two lines. Then the second two lines, it describes, Anukulena Krishnanushilana. These are the two to-dos. Anukulena means in a favorable mood. And Krishna Anushilana means do the things that the previous acharyas did. Don't manufacture your own method of devotional life. Do what devotional service means, the same activities that the previous acharyas did, or the activities that our spiritual master trains us up to do. Don't create, we don't create our own self-styled bhakti. He says, chant Hare Krishna. We don't create our own mantra. By the way, just because I added a few names of Krishna onto one line doesn't make it a formal prayer. So if I stand in front of Krishna and say, Krishna, Govinda, something, something, it's not bona fide. We're asked to chant Hare Krishna and repeat the prayers that the previous acharyas have done. I cannot create my own. Unless Krishna inspires me in a particular way, I cannot. Generally, it's not recommended. We stay in chanting Hare Krishna. We don't mix Hare Krishna with other things. That's just on the side. So, Anukulena, Krishna Anushilana. If there is one and not the other, it's not pure devotional service. For example, remembering Smaranam, correct? It is described that Kamsa was remembering Krishna way more than any of us even can try. He was, Prabhupada says, he was very Krishna conscious. Constantly remembering Krishna. And he was so much, there was a little light that, is that Krishna? Is that Krishna? Is that Krishna? Where's Krishna? He was so Krishna conscious. But what was the problem? He was not anukulena, not in a favorable mood. It was out of fear. And when he saw Krishna, he wanted to kill him. So our devotional service is not just remembering, but remembering in a favorable mood. Anukulena, such that it is favorable to Krishna. Not remembering Krishna in a negative way. Or negative doesn't have much connotation, but in a favorable way. Favorable and unfavorable. Anukulena and Krishna Anushilana. Anushilana means cultivation, practicing. Practicing in means we don't decide, hey, now I have arrived. Or I have practiced for a couple of years, I can do as I like. Cannot do as we like. Anushilana. It also means that we are in fidelity to the disciplic succession. We do as our disciplic succession did. If you're part of another disciplic succession, then we do as part of that disciplic succession. Very, very important. Very important. And just from technical side, I like, because on one hand he says Anukulena, and he says Anushilana, and Krishna's right in the middle. And generally we forget that that's the most important word in the verse. Krishna. Because we can have a favorable mood and we can do like others are doing, but it is meant for Krishna. It's not favorable for me. Because if he had just said Anukulena, then we would think, what is favorable for me? I will do. He says Anukulena Krishna. What is favorable for Krishna? Does it mean that, is it possible that what is favorable to Krishna may not be favorable to us? Possible? Highly likely. Highly likely that what is favorable to Krishna may not be favorable for me. Because I may have to not eat or drink or sleep. I may have to run around, carry this, do that. It may not be favorable for me. What is favorable for me? Perhaps going to sleep. That may not be favorable to Krishna. It doesn't mean we should not sleep. It doesn't mean we should not eat. And all that is place. But even eating and sleeping and all of that, we do it in a mood that it is favorable for Krishna's service. So for example, if we all decide, I don't think we will, but let's say, hypothetically speaking, hey, I want to serve Krishna non-stop. So from today, I will not eat and I will not sleep. Is that a favorable devotional attitude? What do you think? No, why not? How long are you going to last? May not even be tonight. Then it is not favorable to serving Krishna. It all sounds fantastic. Non-stop devotional service, ki jai. We don't see the devotee again. You don't, because it's not favorable to serving Krishna. Favorable means, how do I serve in such a way that for the rest of my life I can continue? We're not here for a couple of days, a week, a month, a year. No, for the rest of my life I want to serve Krishna. So how is it favorable? So these are certain things that one needs to cultivate, and this cultivation, which means we have to be trained in long-term devotional service. So that's this verse. You can say a lot more. Any comments, questions, assertions, objections, Your Honor? Go ahead. I'll repeat the question. Maybe I won't be able to repeat the question. Give him the mic, because he speaks fast.
Hare Krishna, thank you for your class. So we're conditioned our whole life to expect things and get them. And that seems to be, we learn from this class and the teachings, that it's kind of obstruction in spiritual life. I expect a devotee to act a certain way. We're kind of encouraged to get initiated, but is there a difference between, you know, desiring and expecting? Because how not to get discouraged, basically, if, you know, it's like almost like, it seems like it's pointless, almost like Krishna's not obliged, and, you know, how do we not get discouraged? That seems like it's very discouraging.
Well, how not to get discouraged? First of all, we are discouraged when we have false or wrong expectations from the person we are working with. Let's say someone who's working with me has the expectation that I should sing kirtan in a very melodious way. That person will be very disappointed. It's just not in me. It's not in me. Or whatever. Someone else has strong physical capacity or doesn't have, and you expect they should be able to do certain things. Who's going to be disappointed? We. Because we understood the person wrongly. Correct? So when we come to Krishna, Kishore Kishori, and we don't understand who Krishna is, how he operates, how he thinks, what he does, who he is, then we will be disappointed. Therefore, it's described that Sambandha Gyan is the most essential piece in starting that relationship with Krishna, to know who he is. How does he operate? What attracts him? What brings us close to him? Who is he? Who are his devotees? What are the kinds of persons he hangs out with? What is he like? What does he not like? If we don't know these things, we will be very disappointed with Krishna. Very disappointed. So then naturally we'll be discouraged. What is this? I'm praying and praying and praying and whatever. I'm doing this and doing that, and you're not doing anything for me. So we'll be disappointed. That's not our bhakti. Bhakti is to know who Krishna is. We may have certain expectations. A little story on the side. There was a man who was supposedly a very devoted follower of God. And there was a flood in his village. So he was given a warning by someone. There's going to be a massive flood. You should leave and go. He said, no, no, no. My God will come to protect me. So then the flood came. He didn't leave. Everyone else left. He didn't leave. So the flood came. And the water was knee length, the height of the knee. And someone came and told him, you know, all your possessions, your house is in bad condition. You should leave now. There is a boat that is taking people out. You should leave now. I don't want to sit on any boat. My God will come take care of me. Then the water was rising. It went above the roof. So he was standing on the roof. So then they said, there was a chopper that was circling around to see if there are any final persons they could take. And they called out to him, this is the last chopper. Here's the ladder. Get on it. Oh, no chopper. My God will come take care of me. The water level rose even above. And finally he drowned and died. So because he was thinking of God so much, he had the audience of God. Right? It's described at the time of death. So then when he met God, he complained. What is this? I spent all my life talking about you, thinking about you. And at the time of need, when my life was in danger, I was convinced you will come. But you never came. So to make it funny, God gave him one slap and said, you rascal, I came 3 times. First I came as a warning to tell you to go. You didn't take that. Then I came as the boat helping you. You didn't take that. I came as the chopper. You didn't take that. You were expecting something else. I'll fly down on Garuda or what, I don't know. I tried to save you. So what to expect and how? The training of a devotee is to learn to see the hand of God in all circumstances, somehow or the other. Seemingly unfavorable as well. Someone chastises us. There's a hand of God in it. But that's the training, to learn to see without unrealistic expectations of what that reciprocation should look like. Yeah. Anyone else? Sergey? Anyone here? Question?
Hare Krishna. I just have this question. Basically, from the beginning, I remember I was told that, as you mentioned, we don't approach Krishna with the material desires. But at the same time, I also often hear people say, whenever you have difficulties in life, go to Krishna and ask him for help.
Right.
And a couple of things I was thinking about. For example, one is, if he is situated in our hearts, he might know our desires anyway, so there is no need to ask. But at the same time, if we don't ask, he might say, well, he doesn't even ask, so it doesn't need to be fulfilled. And also, I was thinking, at least if we approach with the material desires, I mean, not meaning, you know, I want a new car or this or that, maybe like improve your health or whatever.
Yeah, I want anything. A new car. New, yeah. Different car. Yes. Body is a car.
This type of car, yeah. At least if we approach in this way, it's still kind of, we don't try to resolve it ourselves, but we ask Krishna to help us. So it's, what would you advise about?
So, a few things. Yes, it is true that we shouldn't ask anything from Krishna. It is also true that a devotee can ask Krishna. It depends where the devotee is in their spiritual life. So when we are young and still learning, even material desires we bring to Krishna, no problem. But how we bring it to Krishna is important. My dear Krishna, I have this material desire. What to do? Unfortunately, I don't have the taste for bhakti to say no material desire. I don't have that. But please help me such that this desire, this way or that way, will bring me to your service in more mature way. So that's still a spiritual desire. But I have this material desire. Nothing wrong. It's not wrong. It's not the highest, but it's not wrong. You understand? Second, I have something and Krishna in the heart already knows. Why should I need to ask? You don't need to ask. You don't need to ask. But when a devotee asks or approaches the Lord, it is part of a loving exchange. It's a loving exchange. Krishna already knows what we need. Just as the same argument the impersonalists or Mayavadis will give, but God already has everything. Why are you feeding him? Does he need to have breakfast? Does he need to have lunch? No. He's maintaining all the living entities from ants to elephants to human beings to the demigods, morning, afternoon, evening with food, water. He's maintaining everyone. But we say, Krishna's hungry, tired. Why? Because there is love. It's a part of an exchange, a loving exchange. So part of the loving exchange is to come to Krishna and say, hey, I'm in this difficulty. Please help me so that I can serve you. Nothing wrong. It's the consciousness with which we approach Krishna. If we just say, okay, I'll drop this money in the hundi, watch, fulfill my desires. He will. But there's no relationship. We want relationship with Krishna. So the sweetness is in the relationship. And that's what we're looking for. We're not looking for transaction. We're looking for relationship. Okay. Anything else? Final? Premaras?
Hare Krishna Prabhu. I have a similar question that we were talking about in Nectar of Devotion class. There are different ways that we can serve Krishna, and then there are also different modes that devotees want to serve Krishna with. So I have noticed that certain devotees like to serve Krishna, thinking that, okay, if we serve Krishna, then all the devotees are satisfied. And there is this second approach where devotees feel that if we serve the devotees of Krishna, then Krishna is satisfied. So I would like to understand, like, I think that both the approaches are good ways of serving Krishna, but then I would like to know what are the, like, maybe in a way that as a practicing devotee, what is a better way to...
There's no better way. Both are Krishna conscious. Serving the devotees, so Krishna is pleased. And serving Krishna, so the devotees are pleased. And the devotees are pleased, then Krishna is pleased. Our methodology is said that serving the devotees is higher than serving Krishna. Now what that means, we may not fully understand. So it's a little risky. So we said that if Krishna is pleased, then devotees are naturally pleased. Evam tushte jagat tushta. And if the devotees are pleased, then Krishna is pleased. Both ways, Krishna is pleased. So, either I want to please Krishna this way or I want to please Krishna that way. What is important is whether Krishna is pleased. If the devotees are not pleased, then Krishna may not be pleased. But to please the devotees does not mean you do everything the devotee wants. Right? Suppose the devotees say, from tomorrow no Mangalarti, it's too difficult to wake up because very pleasing to us. No. Drastic example, but you get the idea. But now what is it to please the devotees is a very delicate art in one sense. And that requires Krishna consciousness. So to the degree we can understand this is pleasing to the devotees. What's most important is the intention. And along with intention we have to learn the right way of doing it. Because just good intentions are not good enough. Right? When a devotee is suffering, the doctors have said, don't eat anything. We take all the brown burfi and gulab jamun and give it to the devotee. And he will go back to Godhead. It may not be the most pleasing thing. Because he may not be ready for that. So with good intentions, good actions are necessary. That is anushilana. Good intention is anukulena. And good action is Krishna anushilana. I'm using the word good, which is really a bad word. But you get the idea. Favorable is on the mood side. Anushilana is on the action side. Both are centered around Krishna. Krishna anushilana. That's the beauty of this verse, how Rupa Goswami has written. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam.